About a couple weeks ago, I got a live alert from Facebook telling me that Zuckerberg and Fauci were going live. So I made the big mistake of clicking on it and listening in a little bit. And I made another big mistake and I commented on it. And my qualifiers, I heard it. I heard it huge from everybody. Left and right, I got attacked. Hey, what's going on, my qualifiers? Welcome to another episode of Unqualified News, number 29, with your host, M. Mauricio. That's me. And my comment to Dr. Fauci and Mark Zuckerberg. First of all, I don't know why I got that notification. I'm not following them anywhere on Facebook, so I'm assuming a lot of my qualifiers also got that notification. This was a couple weeks ago. And my comment was something along the lines of, it's hard to believe Fauci now when he's lied to us in the past. Something like that. Something simple, but kind of like, you know, kind of stabby. And quickly, I got comment after comment after comment, like, at Mauricio Hernandez, what are you, some type of Trump sumper? Something like that, like a Trumper. And then I got like other notifications. Hey, Mauricio, how about you just follow the signs and stop spreading rumors? And I just got, honestly, I got so many people commenting. Like, it was over 8 or 12 comments, like 8 or 10 different people, and I just felt attacked. It felt insane, and they were calling me a crazy Republican, and some people were saying, what are you, like, you know, it was a really just a weird situation where I never thought that a simple little comment would have riled up so many fake profiles out there. So I hit him with a respond and basically just kind of like, I touched on everybody's dislike on my post. A lot of people were just kind of talking shit, saying you Trumper. Some people were saying, follow the science, what's wrong with you? And I basically just said, hey, look, like, this is not about left or right. I'm straight down the middle, right on the fence. I'm not a lefty, I'm not a righty. I do believe in science. But my comment was, Fauci did lie. And then he said he did it. So I don't understand. I'm talking facts here. And after that comment, I got zero comments back. Zero. Nobody commented back. I expected to get on a back and forth with some of these 8 to 10 different people, I'm telling you. And zero people commented back. Zero. I have a real public Facebook profile. You click on it, you know where I live. I mean, not an address, but you know, you got the city and the state. So I'm pretty real on Facebook, the same way I am here. And all these fake profiles, nobody said anything. Everybody backed up. I don't know, I just thought that was odd. Enough of that. So on this episode, I bring you guys a business story from CNBC.com. And it's talking about Chipotle launching cauliflower rice nationwide. They were trying it out in, I believe it was Colorado and Michigan. And I guess it did well. So now they're doing it nationwide and in Canada. So for like, I think, extra $2, instead of getting rice, you get cauliflower rice. So that's a big plus for Chipotle. More people, more health conscious people are going to go in there and try to order this product. Also, think about, where are they getting this cauliflower from? Who are they buying it from? Who's the produce manufacturer or distributor that they're buying this produce from? That's another plus to think about. They're doing this nationwide. So that's what you got to think about when it comes, the business side of things, I guess, when it comes to things like that, when you see it on the news. Then I bring you guys another from theguardian.com. And this one comes from Peru. And it's regarding an archaeological site that has basically been overrun by squatters since, seems like, the 1970s. And just recently, it got a little hectic because of all this COVID situation going on. So they really didn't have anywhere to go, but there. So it seems like it kind of got out of hand. That's in there. And then I have an article from BuzzFeed News, and this is an extensive article. This can basically be a documentary if it isn't already. And this has to do with the mass internment camps that they have in China. So they basically are building factories right where the jails are, right where these detention centers are. And they're making people work for little to nothing, you know? They're getting paid, but they're getting paid so little just in order for them to say that they are paying them here. And the people that are in these camps are disfranchised people. people from the top northwest side of China. And when you listen to the article, you'll see that top section of China is bordered by so many different countries that you get an idea of the cultural differences and just think about it. So many different cultures, so many different religions, all in one area. It's something's bound to happen, especially since it's in China. And this has been going on for many, many years. I mean, years past before Unqualified News, I've heard of this in the news, but nobody ever gives it any big attention because we deal so much with China. The whole NBA situation, we kind of back down, you know? We back down because we know that there's so much money there that we'll lose. And that's wrong, but it is the situation. It is what's happening, you know? And I bring you guys another Trump's tweets. I'll keep doing Trump's tweets as long as he keeps tweeting. He always has something crazy to say, and this tweet was pretty insane. But it was flagged by Twitter again. Don't forget, Twitter runs left. But then again, he's spreading some not so true news. So I'll let you catch the episode now. And don't forget, there's a Facebook page, Unqualified News. That's the best way to get a hold of me. Send me questions. Anonymous or, well, it can't be anonymous much, but I mean, you can tell me not to say who asked, you know? So I appreciate you guys and have a great week. Squatters issue death threats to archaeologists who discovered oldest city in the Americas. This one is from The Guardian by Dan Collins in Lima, Peru. Illegal squatters have invaded the ruins of the oldest city in the Americas and made death threats against Ruth Shady, the celebrated Peruvian archaeologist who discovered the 5,000-year-old civilization. The threats came via telephone calls and messages to various workers at the archaeological site at the height of Peru's COVID-19 pandemic. They followed reports to the police and prosecutors about the invasions of the ancient ruins of Caral. They called the site's lawyer and said if he continued to protect me, they would kill him, along with me, and bury us 5 meters below the ground, said Shady, 73 years old. Then they killed our dog as a warning. They poisoned her as if to say, look at what will happen to you, she said. It is not the first time Shady has been threatened or attacked. In 2003, she was shot in the chest during an assault on the 1,546-acre archaeological complex, which was declared a UNESCO World Heritage Site in 2009. After 9 invasions of the sacred city during the pandemic period, Shady and her team repeatedly asked the authorities to intervene. There is a feeling that there is no authority dedicated to the protection and defense of our heritage. It's a huge worry, she said. In July, squatters used a heavy digger, knocked down adobe walls, and tore up the ground, destroying ancient ceramics, tombs containing mummies, textiles, and household remains, before police and the site staff were able to stop them. As a result of Shady's pleas, a police car now patrols the archaeological site day and night, but nothing has been done to punish or evict the land invaders. The squatters are believed to belong to a single extended family and claim the land was given to them in the 1970s during Peru's controversial agrarian land reform, which was pushed through by the leftist military dictatorship. Shady denies the claim. They do not have a single land title. The owner of the land is the Peruvian state. A planned eviction of one of the squatters was thwarted in December when a local prosecutor failed to give the order to proceed despite having the support of police officers, Shady said. Land prices in the area have risen from around $5,000 per hectare to as much as $50,000 per hectare as outsiders rush to buy land around the prestigious archaeological site, which is surrounded by a 56-square-mile buffer zone. Shady, who was named on the BBC's 100 Women list last year, first visited Caral in 1978, but it was not until 1994 that she discovered the ancient city and began to properly excavate the site, which is situated on the dry desert terrace overlooking the Supe River Valley, nearly 200 kilometers or 124 miles north of Lima. What she uncovered was the oldest center of civilization in the Americas, which UNESCO describes as exceptionally well-preserved. With a complex architectural design with monumental stone and unearthen platform mounts and sunken circular courts. Organic material found at the site has been carbon dated back to 2627 BCE. Shady and her team continue to investigate and excavate a dozen former settlements, half of the 24 situated in the Supe Valley, which form a part of the Caral Supe civilization. Their findings have revealed musical instruments such as flutes made of animal and bird bones, and evidence of the civilization of multicolored cotton used in textiles. We can't allow archaeological sites to continue being invaded and destroyed because it is an unwritten history, and we recover that history through our investigation, said Shady. If we can't do that, it is like burning a book which no one will ever read. I hope we can continue to investigate and continue to recover our history because it has such an interesting message, she added. It was a very, very peaceful society. We have not found even a single walled settlement. There is a message there that we, human beings, should live in harmony between ourselves and nature, Shady concluded. We are living throughout this pandemic in part due to our mistreatment of nature. And there you have it, my qualifiers. That's from TheGuardian.com by some cat named Dan Collins. And history always, always fascinates me, especially ancient history. So that's why I brought you guys this article. And it's basically ancient history of the Americas. North America, South America. So that's incredibly exciting because, as we all know it, history basically started in Mesopotamia. That's in the Middle East. So it's incredibly exciting for me. I'm from North America, or, you know, Central and South America, to know that there were very ancient civilizations here. That's exciting to me. That's where I brought you guys this. Alrighty, we have another Trump's tweets. At Real Donald Trump. This one was about 5 hours ago, and there is a little blue mark there. It says, this claim about election fraud is disputed. So here we go. It's a good one. The Surrender Caucus within the Republican Party will go down in infamy as weak and ineffective guardians of our nation, who were willing to accept the certification of fraudulent presidential numbers. And there you have it. That's about 5 hours ago from Donald J. Trump on Twitter. It has 35,000 comments, about 45,000 retweets, and 151,000 loves. Also has a little blue flag. This claim about election fraud is disputed. That's because Twitter and Donald Trump are not getting along right now. We found the factories inside China's mass internment camps. This one comes from BuzzFeedNews.com by Allison Killing and Megha Rajagopalan. China has built more than 100 new facilities in Xinjiang where it can not only lock up people, but also force them to work in dedicated factory buildings right on site. BuzzFeed News can reveal based on government records, interviews, and hundreds of satellite images. In August, BuzzFeed News uncovered hundreds of compounds in Xinjiang bearing the hallmarks of prisons or detention camps, many built during the last 3 years in a rapid escalation of China's campaign against Muslim minorities, including Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and others. A new analysis shows that at least 135 of these compounds also hold factory buildings. Forced labor on a vast scale is almost certainly taking place inside these facilities, according to the researchers and interviews with former detainees. Factories across Xinjiang, both inside and outside the camps, tend to share similar characteristics. They are typically long and rectangular, and their metal roofs are usually brightly colored, often blue, sometimes red, in contrast to the masonry and concrete of typical detention buildings. The factories have steel frames which can be erected within as little as a month. The steel frame is sturdy enough to hold the roof without interior columns, leaving more space inside for large machinery or assembly lines. Some of the biggest factory buildings have strips of skylights to let light in. Collectively, the factory facilities identified by BuzzFeed News cover more than 21 million square feet, nearly four times the size of the Mall of America. And they are growing in a way that mirrors the rapid expansion of the mass detention campaign, which has ensnared more than 1 million people since it began in 2016. 14 million square feet of new factories were built in 2018 alone. Two former detainees told BuzzFeed News they had worked in factories while they were detained. One of them, Gulziria Aluam, said she and other women traveled by bus to a factory where they would sew gloves. Asked if she was paid, she simply laughed. The former detainees said they were never given a choice about working and that they earned a pittance or no pay at all. I felt like this was hell, Dina Nurdi Bai, who was detained in 2017 and 2018, told BuzzFeed News. Before her confinement, Nurdi Bai ran a small garment business at a factory inside the internment camp where she was held. She said she worked in a cubicle that was locked from the outside, sewing pockets onto school uniforms. They created this evil place and they destroyed my life, she said. In response to questions about this article, the Chinese consulate in New York quoted a worker in Xinjiang's Carrickax County who called allegations of forced labor in the region slander while speaking at a government press conference, saying villagers in the region are earning higher salaries and learning new skills. We hope everyone can distinguish right from wrong, respect the facts, and do not be deceived by rumors, the consulate added. Xinjiang's industry is booming, and the region has one of the fastest GDP growth rates in China. Xinjiang exports a range of products from clothing to machinery, and the US is one of the region's fastest growing markets. Xinjiang's factories produce many goods that eventually make their way to US consumers. Apple, Nike, and Coca-Cola, among others, lobbied Congress this year to water down a bill that would ban the imports of products made with forced labor there. The bill overwhelmingly passed the House representatives. Corporations should stop producing in and sourcing from Xinjiang, said Scott Nova, executive director of the Worker Rights Consortium. There is no way to produce responsibly in the region until the forced labor and broader repression ends. Nova and other labor rights advocates, as well as experts who have examined the abuses in Xinjiang, argue that forced labor is so widespread in the region that no company that manufactures there could conclude that its supply chain is free from it. That would mean that US consumers have no real way of knowing whether the goods they purchase from Xinjiang are tainted. The Chinese government in Xinjiang surveils people so thoroughly and monitors interviews so closely that it is nearly impossible to independently assess if one or any factory relies on forced labor. This is especially true given that economy programs designed to move people out of poverty by moving rural farm workers into factory jobs effectively give cover for the government to conceal why a person might be working far from their home. But when factories are located inside internment compounds, cut off from the world by high walls and barbed wire, it beggars belief to claim workers are there willingly. Detention camp factories are woven deeply in Xinjiang's economy. The Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit research institute, C4ADS, compared the locations of the factories identified by BuzzFeed News to a database that compiles address information from China's government registry for businesses. C4ADS identified 1,500 Chinese companies located at or right by the factories. Of those, 92 listed import-export as part of the scope of their business. BuzzFeed News found further information about these companies in corporate documents, state media reports, and other public data. According to trade data dating back to 2016, some of these companies have exported goods all over the world, including Sri Lanka, Kyrgyzstan, Panama, and France. One company sent pants to California. One of these firms in Xinjiang, Jihua 7555 Occupational Wear, which makes military uniforms, it has counted the People's Liberation Army, the paramilitary People's Armed Police and China's Public Security Bureau amongst its customers, producing hundreds of thousands of pieces of clothing each year. In its parent company's 2019 annual report, the company is explicit about its participation in labor transfer programs. The company transferred at least 45 ethnic minorities who do not speak Chinese from southern Xinjiang to work, the report says. They stayed in shared rooms holding three or four people, according to the report, and they received a monthly food stipend of 360 yuan, about $55. An article in the state-controlled China News Service said the company's workers at its Heijing branch were laboring overtime to fulfill a clothing order for protective coveralls, having already skipped a vacation that the factory manager said was offered last year. The workers also attend bilingual night school to learn Chinese every Monday. They hold a flag-raising ceremony and sing the praises of the Communist Party's policies, as well as a socialist thought with Chinese characteristics in the Xi Jinping new era. The way these workers were treated tracks with China's known behavior in the region. The government's anti-poverty campaign moves impoverished ethnic minorities referred to as surplus labor to jobs ranging from picking cotton to sewing clothing. Local policy documents refer to these workers as having lazy thinking and praise the government for creating an atmosphere that labor is glorious and laziness is shameful. According to recent research of Xinjiang from German scholar Adrian Zenz. Zenz and other researchers say these labor transfers can be a front for forced labor, especially in an environment where Muslim minorities live in fear of being arbitrarily locked up. As a part of its campaign targeting ethnic minorities in the region, the government has also crushed education in minority languages. Dozens of ex-detainees told BuzzFeed News they were forced to study Chinese in internment camps and regularly praised the ruling Communist Party. One of Xinjiang Jihua's registered addresses matches the location of a large complex of internment facilities, which together can hold 11,700 people. This sprawling installation lies just over 3.5 miles from the center of Heijing County, in an isolated area bounded by empty plots of land and an industrial estate to the north and farmland to the south. Six blue-roofed factories sit in their own compound right in the middle of the complex. They appear to be linked directly to adjacent detention buildings via a gate in the wall. Xinjiang Jihua did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Another company, Hetian Yudu Handicrafts, is registered inside a compound in Lop County in southern Xinjiang. Satellite photos show it bears the telltale signs of an internment camp. A state media article about labor transfer programs in the area quotes a Uyghur woman who went to work there weaving carpets, promising to earn a surplus for the company. Hetian Yudu did not respond to multiple requests for comment. Labor transfer for Uyghurs, Kazakhs, and Xinjiang's other minority groups extend beyond the region to other parts of China. The Australian Strategic Police Institute, a Canberra-based think tank that has published research documenting human rights abuses in Xinjiang, in March identified 27 factories in 9 Chinese provinces using Uyghur and Kazakh workers from Xinjiang under a government labor transfer program. Refusing these work assignments is extremely difficult, the institute found, because they are enmeshed with the apparatus of detention and political indoctrination. In many cases, Chinese language state media articles show photos of migrant workers who appear to be ethnic minorities boarding buses or working on assembly lines. The articles say that they're participating in a poverty alleviation program, but they're subject to strict controls and constant surveillance, and live in fear of being sent to camps or otherwise punished if they don't comply. After work, they must participate in patriotic education, according to former detainees and Chinese language news articles about the programs. A white paper published by the Chinese government in September offers clues into the scale of the program, saying the average relocation of surplus labor per year topped 2.76 million people. According to the state media reports, efforts to alleviate poverty in Xinjiang compromise a wide range of industries ranging from textile factories and food processing to livestock slaughter and cotton farming. It's unclear what portion of workers in these programs are being forced to work, underpaid, or otherwise mistreated. But experts say the number is large and growing. Research suggests that some of those transferred to work are not willing and are severely underpaid, raising concerns about forced labor, potentially at a significant scale, the Washington, D.C.-based think tank's Center of Strategic and International Studies found. The U.S. Department of Labor estimated that 100,000 Uyghurs and other ethnic minorities are working in forced labor. The Better Cotton Initiative, an industry group that promotes ethical standards for cotton producers, told the BBC this month that it had stopped auditing and certifying farms in Xinjiang in part because the poverty alleviation schemes cast a shadow of forced labor over the entire industry there. The abuses in Xinjiang may affect the supply chains of some of world's most recognizable brands. In its March report, the Australian Strategic Policy Institute also identified 82 multinational companies with suppliers that used Uyghur workers outside Xinjiang as part of labor transfer program, including Abercrombie & Finch, Dell, Apple, Amazon, H&M, Nike, Nintendo, General Motors, and others. Some brands said they stopped working with those suppliers this year, according to the Institute's report. Others said they had no contractual relationships with the suppliers involved in the labor transfer programs. But no brands were able to rule out a link further down their supply chain. Apple said in July that it had found no evidence of forced labor on its production lines. And there you have it. My qualifiers, that's from BuzzFeedNews.com, and that's a lengthy article about forced labor camps in China. They're getting paid some type of money, and that's just so that they can basically not call it slave labor. But it is that. It is just children and people being forced to work to make our Nikes and our H&M hats and our batteries for our iPhones. You know, there's more to this article. It's BuzzFeedNews.com. You can search for it. We found the factories inside China's mass internment camps. Seems like they have a lot of parts to this article. So there's a couple more parts. So there's a lot of information here. And it all relates to those factories that it seems like BuzzFeed News has, you know, people on the ground really looking at these factories year after year. They keep growing, keep getting bigger. And this is something big right here. I don't know if it'll ever really come to light. I mean, it's getting bigger, it's growing. So I don't think they're slowing down here. Chipotle, ticker symbol CMG, launches cauliflower rice nationwide as consumers cut grains from their diets. This one comes from CNBC.com by Amelia Lucas. And I want to include this one on the business side more so because CMG, Chipotle Mexican Grill, has been shooting up since the pandemic. Everybody forgot all about the E. coli they used to have, and the stock has been rising. So onward, here we go. Chipotle Mexican Grill on Monday began offering a cauliflower rice option to attract consumers trying to comply with their New Year's resolutions. The rice substitute is made with grilled cauliflower, cilantro, lime, and salt, and will be available in U.S. and Canadian restaurants for a limited time. The option will cost an additional $2 for tacos, burritos, or bowls. Chipotle started testing the item at select locations in Colorado and Wisconsin this July. The company said that before the test, one-third of new menu requests from customers was for cauliflower rice. The rice substitute has grown popular as more consumers cut grains out of their diet. In the test markets, nearly 1 in 3 customers who chose cauliflower rice was an infrequent or new Chipotle customer. To promote the nationwide launch, Chipotle is also extending its line of lifestyle bowls, which began 2 years earlier to attract consumers who were trying to follow strict diets. The new variations on Whole 30, ketogenic, vegetarian, and vegan lifestyle bowls will include cauliflower rice. The options are available for digital orders only. Chipotle CEO Brian Nicole said in April that the chain is developing other menu items, but the coronavirus pandemic has delayed some launches. It began testing brisket in select markets in November. While the burrito chain still has fewer limited time launches than fast food chains, it has been expanding its offerings under Nicole, who previously led Yum Brands Taco Bell. Shares of Chipotle gained 65% in 2020, fueled by its strong digital growth and surging same-store sales, despite the pandemic. The stock had a market value of $38.8 billion as of Thursday's close. And there you have it, my qualifiers. That's from CNBC.com. Chipotle, ticker symbol CMG. If you're interested, any trading site. I use Robinhood. Everybody, people use Stockpile. There's E-Trade. There's so many. So Robinhood's the best one though. But hey, CMG, Chipotle, it's still going up. And I think they're right. They're digital. My family orders Chipotle all the time. And it's always, I guess, digitally, you know, it's always on their app or wherever it is. Actually, I don't know where we order it from. I don't know if Chipotle has their own app, but it seems to me that they're definitely growing through digital sales here. And cauliflower rice doesn't sound that bad either, so I'm willing to try that.